Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 274 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and after taking in the sights of the Johan Cruyff Stadium a few days ago, it's Levan, a.k.a. Barcelev. And Levan, it was a slow news week, but we'll get into all the Barca stuff in a bit. But honestly, I'm still buzzing from the NBA draft last night. I know Emil and Frances are big basketball guys, and I do see quite a bit of crossover with our listeners. Are you going to give them something, or is basketball not your taste?
I actually played basketball in high school when I lived in the States. But I was more like I followed basketball more then than now. When was it, last week or the week before? Time goes by so fast. I woke up way too early at 4 a.m. here in Barcelona. I was like, what on earth am I doing up? And I was like, oh wait, game 7 is on. So I watched like the last two quarters of the Bucks versus the Suns, and I was happy for. I'm not even gonna try to pronounce his name, man. But the Greek Nigerian dude.
Yep.
Dude, giant, who won his ring, but the draft I did not follow. Sorry.
Yeah, right. That's like the news before the news. That's, I mean, to me, the draft is the same thing as me watching Barca B stuff. You know, it's about the future. It's about guys that could potentially make an impact a few years down the road. But to me, it on draft night, it always feels like the whole landscape. And same thing with Barca preseason. When we watch Gabi play, we're like, oh, the whole future of Barcelona has changed. I mean, not really, but that's like the exaggerations. But when I watch the NBA draft, same thing. It's like, oh, the fortunes of the Magic. They had a great draft last night because they got Jalen Suggs to fall to them, and they had Franz Wagner. I was like, oh, you know, the Magic, their whole thing is different. But then next year, they're still going to win 23 games or something because those are two rookies, and you can only expect so much out of certain rookies. And then same thing where the Pistons. Yes, they got the number one draft, Cade Cunningham, but he's 3 years away from being an all-star, probably, you know, likely. You know, you do have generational talents like Luka Doncic who come out and they're 20 years old and they're doing things that are historic. But most guys take 2-3 years to develop in the NBA. Then they kind of break in as an all-star. And then like Zion Williamson, what we expect next year, where Zion Williamson was on the precipice last year. And now you're going to expect, hey, this guy's good enough. He has to make the playoffs. But of those rookies, they're on bad teams for a reason. So guys get drafted to bad teams and now they're bad teams. And to go back to Barcelona, it's a very similar thing where the reason we're seeing all these young players is because Barca have put themselves in a little bit of a financial mess, and now that's why you've got to have all these young players around the peripheral and making appearances. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited and buzzing about that, but we got to talk some Barcelona, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But related to this, it's very interesting how the draft keeps sports honest because those weak teams get to usually get the best picks unless they traded them away or unless they choose Bowie instead of Jordan and then have to live with that for the rest of their lives. But another effect of this is that in the United States, you almost don't see anybody playing for their hometown team. And that's what is nice about European football, that you know, clubs like Barcelona actually have players who come through our youth system, mm-hmm. so that when we go to the stadium, we not only root for our club, we root for us, and that adds like this extra bit of passion, this extra bit of feeling of belonging to a club.
Right, but when it does happen in the NBA, though, like with LeBron James, where he gets drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers, then it makes when he leaves that much more painful, and then he returns the promised son returns and wins the NBA title in 2016, it just means triple amount more because he did it for his hometown club and hometown team, all these things. And I mean, it also does affect free agency. A lot of players are from Chicago. A lot of players are from LA. And what's always interesting in today's modern NBA is that Chicago, not many players, whether it's Anthony Davis or whoever it may be from Chicago, they very rarely do they go back to their hometown. Unlike, except with the exception of actually Derrick Rose, who was drafted by number one overall by his hometown Chicago Bulls, unfortunately has those injuries. But then a lot of guys are from LA. So like Westbrook now being traded to the Lakers, technically that's his homecoming. Kawhi Leonard goes back to the Clippers, as well as Paul George forces his way back to the hometown. And you're talking a lot about the coast and what's the difference between a coastal team and having a super huge club. Like, you know, for Barcelona, don't they feel like they should be able to lay claim to all of these different talents in the Catalonia region? And then now you have Man City, though, with all of their scouts in there, and Girona basically being able to try to pluck from that academy as well. Though the Girona academy at the youth level hasn't really produced any top talents. Usually it's Espanyol or Barcelona, or even Dom is more successful at producing top-level talents than Girona. And actually, that's a question for you. I know we've completely started off on the wrong foot, but I do want to ask you that question, though, real quick. Is there a reason, is it just the metropolitan reason why you think that there are young players from Dom and Espanyol and Barca who are able to become first team or to become professionals at, you know, at any level, as opposed to Girona, which doesn't really, unless they're actually coming through all the way to the Girona first team, you don't really see a lot of youth academy products jumping from the Girona academy other places and succeeding at first team level?
Talent pool, right? The metropolitan area of Barcelona is half of Catalonia,
sure,
population-wise. And not just Catalonia. I think if ever there is Catalan independence, Barcelona as a club is going to hurt a lot. Many socials won't care because they care more about independence than they care about their football club. I'm not saying that they're right or wrong. I'm just stating a fact. But if we cannot recruit in Spain, then there is no Ansu Fati, there is no Andres Iniesta, and so on and so on.
Right, right. Yeah, there's no, I mean, even the current generation, there's no Juan Miranda, there's no Gabi, who's a Real Batiste product. Yep, yeah. All of these young players.
The Nico only Gonzalez. Ones,
yep, Nico Gonzalez from Deportivo La Coruña area. Yep, for sure. All right, so let's move into the really exciting stuff. I hope people enjoyed our little preamble there. That tells you the kind of slow week that it was, because I start by saying I don't really want to waste time in the show. I'm going to bring it up because it was quote-unquote news. But there was, I'm not going to waste much time on Barca tweeting out and then deleting their credit rating, which, great, they can borrow at less than 3%, which is expected of any major company and organization. So it's not like the rating was very good. Again, I'm not a financial expert, but I do know enough about credit ratings to know that it's fine. Again, there's no news there. That's the whole point. And I think they were just putting that out as some positive piece of news. And that's why it was then deleted, because it didn't really help move the needle on anything. And then the other piece of not news, if you will, is the statement today that nothing has changed with the Super League except for UEFA. And we knew this, that UEFA was not going to be able to punish Juventus, Real Madrid, and Barcelona as one unit, because you cannot punish those three teams all at the same time and expect to be able to make any bit of the amount of money that you expect in income in the coming season just because of those three fan bases and the number of people that support those in the Champions League. And then there's also no news in the fact that those three clubs are going to continue to try to work through some idea of the Super League. I think it's all the way back to square one, but we knew that these teams were going to hold fast on the financial rewards that they believe will come to the Super League. So again, no news there.
I mean, almost no news. The fact that, you know, I don't know if it was a court or a judge that ruled that they cannot take any punitive measures against our club, that is always good news to me.
Yeah.
What I wonder is, you know, if the other founding members have left us, whether it is really true that we can get money from them, whether they have to pay a penalty, which would be hilarious, but even the hypothetical possibility would be worth a whole podcast by itself.
Right. Yeah, and we could tackle that when we get there, if they ever get there. Again, this is going out in the courts, so that's why you're talking about weeks and months between rulings coming down. What is coming a little more prevalent is tomorrow's preseason matchup against Stuttgart, or preseason friendly, if you will, against Stuttgart in Germany. So most of the team has gone to Germany. Sans Messi, who's in Ibiza with Luis Suarez, his old friend, as well as Pedri being at the Olympics, and a few other players trickling in as well. But what do you expect, having been at the Johan Cruyff Stadium last week to see that preseason friendly, what do you expect to see now that you're going to be watching on a screen against Stuttgart?
I expect less minutes for some of the young guys, because we have more first-teamers on the squad right now, right? Brathwaite came back. Help me out here. Who else is back?
Araujo is back. We'll expect to see him, as well as it would be the... well, I think Emerson's actually going to be presented on Monday. I don't think Emerson traveled. But yeah, so we are going to see a few more first-teamers. But I think you're right, too, that... Well, because the B team didn't really travel. So there's very few, with the exception of Gabi and Balde and Demir, the ones that I've been mentioning, and Nico Gonzalez. No, and then Arnau Kamas is the last B team member, because then Peña and Callado have not been presented with the B team. They're being presented as first teamers. So yeah, there's only with Kamas might be the only B team that doesn't even make an appearance. I expect to see the rest do come off the bench in the same way. And I think my only question, we'll talk about at the end of the show about the attacking thing, but yeah, with most of the players back now, there is a chance that Pedri gets rested and that Messi might pick up a little knock. And this is going to be a lineup. And yes, Aguero might not be around either, but he'll be coming off the bench. So you could see through Stuttgart, 9 of the starting 11 that Barcelona's going to throw out there. So I am interested to see about the combinations that are put out and how players interact with one another, even more so than against Girona, where it did still feel like very, very pre-season-y with youth players meshed in with the first teamers.
Exactly. I think especially that central defense pairing is going to be so important, because you don't want Umtiti to start the season for us. Basically, you don't want Umtiti to ever start for us again.
But that's who's missing, unfortunately. Eric Garcia and Mingueza are both still with Spain at the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So missing those two, it's got to be Araujo. Or Lenglet. It'll probably be Lenglet, PK, Lenglet, yeah. And then Araujo coming in the second half, potentially with Comas. That is then a death sentence to Umtiti, which we already know is a death sentence. They're trying to get rid of him. But that would just mean that, hey, you're not even going to be, we're not even trying to shop you anymore in preseason to show you off. Like, someone just has to come and get you. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, all of the reports are how fit Umtiti is and how well he is preparing. But you got to ask yourself whether the club is just feeding this to journalists to get the word out that, you know, hey, he is worth a little bit of money, or he is worth at least considering whether you take on his salary to other clubs. But yeah, I think, you know, realistically, we are looking at Piqué and another defender. I would hope that it is Araujo. Of course, Araujo on the left of that pairing, already like having the weakness of not playing the ball out of defense very well. So you might want to try Araujo on the right and Piqué on the left. However, are you going to start with that pair so soon after Araujo got back? We'll see. And then on the right of the defense is going to be Dest. On the left, Alba is not back, is he?
Yeah, Alba's around. Yep.
Alba's around.
Yep, he was go-karting, so he'll get the start. Yep.
Okay, so yeah, Alba on the left.
If you love listening to us here on the Barcelona podcast, what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast, just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you for just the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into this program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. The summer of soccer continues on Paramount+. Stream over 2,000 soccer matches a year from around the world. That's all the heart-pounding drama from CBS Sports, including UEFA Champions League, Europa League, Italy Serie A, Argentina Primera Division, the Brasileiro, NWSL, the Asian Football Confederation, and the CONCACAF qualifiers, featuring the stars from the U.S. and Mexican men's national teams. Plus, much more. It's the best of the beautiful game, with all the beautiful names like Messi, Mbappe, Ronaldo, Rapinoe, and Pulisic. Be part of the excitement as champions are crowned and history is made. The world's game lives here on Paramount Plus. Visit ParamountPlus.com to start your free trial and stream every match live.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think I made the claim on Monday that at this juncture, with how difficult it is to even get off the guys that they're desperately trying to get off, with Lenglet's wages being considerably lower than the likes of Coutinho and Griezmann and Umtiti, Lenglet, I said it was, I think I said 88%. I think that's where I'm at. The one caveat there is that just because Lenglet is staying doesn't mean that he is the guaranteed starter, and I have to keep convincing myself of that, where that was the case and it felt like that was the case last summer, but there were times we saw in the spring that when Koeman didn't trust Lenglet or when Lenglet was out of form, he didn't start. And so we know that Koeman is judging Lenglet based on his actual performance and not just shoehorning him in because he should be the starter over Araujo. And Araujo is also another year older, so he'll be 22 this year. And yes, I think Koeman has also mentioned that he would prefer to have a left-footed center back on the left and a right-footed center back, but Garcia is right-footed, Araujo, and they're opposite players, Araujo and Garcia. Really, I think those two complement each other so well, but Garcia is right-footed, Araujo is right-footed, Piqué is right-footed, Mingueza is right-footed, and Lenglet, he is the only left-footed center back, but you can't really play Lenglet and Araujo together at all because you can't play the style. They can't play it out of the back. And as good as Iñaki Peña is with Ter Stegen out, if he winds up being the backup goalkeeper, the news this week is Neto will be another one who will be sent or to be sold. So with Peña in the back, the combination of Peña, Lenglet, and Araujo, that's just not going to happen of working the ball out of the back. Again, Peña does well, but he's not even Ter Stegen level. Ter Stegen makes mistakes. He's not a top elite ball-playing goalkeeper. So I think that's the only combination he won't stay. But in the preseason friendly, it's a preseason friendly against Stuttgart. I mean, Lenglet, Araujo might be the experiment. So I think that's the other thing we're going here. How much do you think Koeman is now going to be experimenting at this point? I mean, we've seen the 4-3-3. So do you think he's gone back on that 3-5-2?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going back to the 4-3-3. Also because Koeman is going to play to keep his job, and there's a new president, and I think it was very clear that what Laporta is looking for is not a 3-5-2, even though the idea that 3-5-2 is incompatible with positional play may or may not be true depending on who you play in that 3-5-2, right? For me, if you play Frenkie de Jong in the middle of that back line, you're fine because that 3-5-2 becomes very, very attacking. Regardless, I think right now he's going to look for center back pairings, and I think he's going to experiment pairings that make sense. So, like you said, Lenglet and Araujo together does not make sense unless he wants to pair Piqué with Umtiti, in which case Lenglet and Araujo are the two that are left and play together in the second half or whatever. So we'll see. I think another very interesting thing is that, Busquets is back. So you have Busquets and Frenkie de Jong in midfield. But the third midfield slot with Pedri out for the Olympics and probably being, he'll probably be asked to take a couple of weeks off when he comes back. So that third spot is very much up for grabs. And it will be interesting to see what Koeman is thinking about there, because there are so many directions that he could go, despite the lack of midfielders that we have, not counting, of course, Gavi, who I'm very excited about, and Nico Gonzalez.
Right. Nico, if Busquets is right back in, I think Nico, for the first team, is only going to play the pivot, which, again, is a little odd because he's only been playing the pivot since the spring of last season, even though he played a little bit at youth level with the pivot, but usually he was an interior in the third division. So I think, again, he'll probably come in, what, the 60th minute, 70th minute for Busquets, potentially, if Busquets starts. And then, yeah, Dion will be one of the interiors. And then does Koeman go with the, I think, the player closest to Pedri, and that is technically Gabi. I mean, Puig is much more comfortable just a little bit farther forward and playing a different role than what Pedri and Gabi and what that third interior next to De Jong is asked to do. I think my big question too is, I'm going to be looking at Memphis, of course. I'll be looking at Griezmann and their positioning. It was one of the things I looked at against Girona, and we'll be really trying to figure out how they use that space. And I thought Kayato did really well with them up top. And I know the idea of having three players who don't have a distinct position in the front three. So to say that Griezmann was a left winger is kind of a lie. I mean, he would pop up on the right side. He would be underneath Memphis at times. And that was very, very free-forming. And same thing with Memphis. He would drop deep at times to try to create. He would move over a bit to the right and then make that run in behind. Or he would make that straight run on the left. But Kayata was also cutting in to his left foot. Not even, I know Messi owns the right wing, but no, Kayata was doing his own thing, the thing he did for the B team, where he picks it up either at midfield. He was dropping in as an interior at times, moving out to the right wing to take up that position. So I'm interested to see where Koeman believes, if he believes that Kayata is going to be part of the first team, where he believes Kayata is going to fit best. Because if you do see in a starting midfield trio of Kayata, De Jong, and Busquets, I think that answers a lot of questions about where he views Kayata, about where he views Puig, the way and the role that he wants that third. And yes, it is Pedri is the role, but the way that that third interior is supposed to be conducting their business in midfield. So I think where Kayato and when we see Kayato, I think is going to answer a lot of questions for me as to some of the other players on the roster.
From the little we have seen this preseason, I almost think that, you know, Gavi with 16 years old,
well, he's 17 next month, which isn't crazy, right? Now 17 makes sense. It's a first
team. That changes everything. Yeah. From the little we have seen, I would almost say that Gavi at 17 might have a better shot at winning that place than Collado. Because Koeman has not played Collado in midfield yet. He has played Gavi there. There are a lot of reports saying that Koeman is completely in love with the kid. Judging on what I saw against Girona, it's easy to understand why. I'm not one of those guys who watches youth games. I watch a couple of Barca B games a season.
Well, good so thing I am one of those guys. So good thing at least half of us.
So I was just so impressed with how natural that game came to Gavi. I know that he did not play a full game, not even a full half. But still, for a 16-year-old to go onto the pitch with Griezmann, with Depay, and just play as if he belongs. I remember that everybody was impressed when we saw Riqui Puig in preseason. But this went beyond. And of course, we're only judging on less than 45 minutes. Because I think the previous game against Nastic, he played well, but Nastic had like... did not have their heart in it anymore. With just 10 men on the pitch.
10 men, yeah.
So it would be very interesting to see if Gavi continues to get chances. Of course, I don't think it would be the best thing for him.
Right.
I think it would be good for Gavi to go to Barca B and train with the first team and then lead Barca B to get that experience. Then Collado at the point of that three-man midfield, I don't see it. I prefer Puig there. Or, you know, this is an option that we've talked about a couple of shows ago. I still like Griezmann AG, yeah. In that slot.
Griezmann, the club is still trying to figure out behind the scenes, but every passing day, every passing week, as long as Coutinho and Pjanic and Umtiti, the more and more days go by, that, to me, raises the chances that Lenglet and Griezmann are going to continue on at the club. There's no way they're getting rid of Griezmann and Lenglet if they can't even move the unmovable objects, if you will, just based on the finances. But speaking of finances, speaking of young players, you know, if I'm Ilash Moriba and I already have kind of a foot out the door and I'm looking, I'm saying, oh, Gabi's already coming from my spot and Nico Gonzalez is coming from my spot. And so I think it's not even about Ilash, because this, I also think that because of the slow news cycle, if you will, and the lack of news coming out of exoduses from FC Barcelona's first team, I think there's more attention paid on this Ilash story than there usually would be. This is kind of your run-of-the-mill contract negotiation that's not going well, and that happens a lot. I mean, over the course of Messi's career, there have been junctures where those contract negotiations haven't been looking good, and then, of course, he always resigns. He always comes back to the club. And that happens with a lot of players at a lot of different levels. And so it becomes a bigger referendum, I think, more than Ilash, about how Barca are handling young player contracts, particularly the highest paid earners like Ilash Moriba. And what also brings this to the forefront is Cadet A, Ico Bravo, who I had mentioned on that show with Navid, he was probably Barcelona's, we'll say, best forward who's under the age of 19 or 18, if you will, where he was the best player at 16 years old at that level. And apparently he wanted to go from the Cadet A to the Juvenil A. So instead, to be with U19s, he left for Bayer Leverkusen. They just offered him a straight shot to the U19s. He didn't have to do the U18s at all. And potentially that means that he might also have in his contract things about reaching the first team a little quicker. And for his career, I'm glad he went there instead of a Chelsea, like we saw other players have gone, or Man City, where I think if you're a young player, if you go to Man City or Chelsea over Barca, I mean, you're just, it's the same problem. But for him to go and choose Bayer Leverkusen, their U19s, he gives himself a much better opportunity to reach a first team a lot quicker than Barcelona. Totally understand that. Again, don't fault the player for looking to try to get what they want as quick as they can. And then financially, my problem with the Ilash is their agent is this German agency, Rogan. You heard this story, Levan?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So friend of the pod, Alex Tuica, was on top of this story. So agents are different with every client, but one of the only other quote-unquote big players that Rogan represents is Max Meyer, who a few years ago played for Schalke. That's where he got his notoriety. That's where he made his first Germany appearance with Schalke a few years ago. But he asked for a huge contract. Instead, Schalke goes, that's crazy. You're Max Meyer. You're not Toni Kroos. And then he winds up at Crystal Palace on a free transfer a few years later, going from a German international to a player now last year who can barely find a spot at Köln, who was in a relegation fight in the Bundesliga, where he played 10 matches last season in the spring after basically being forced out of Palace. And so Rogan has a terrible reputation as being an agency that negotiates out the wazoo too much, too many talks, too much hardlining, too much, you know, arguing with these clubs, and the clubs kind of shut down. And so for Ilash Moriba to choose the agent is puzzling from the beginning. His old agent was his dad, but it is puzzling. So he's not traveling to Germany with the first team. He had 18 appearances with the first team last year with one goal and three assists that he's trying to argue his credibility for. And it was reported by Diario that the player asked for a 3 million net salary per season, which is triple what he earns right now and more than players like Pedri and Araujo. So the latest news is that Roman Planas and Matteo Alemany on Wednesday met with his agents. A fourth meeting is set, but they are still not close at all, if reports to be believed. His deal expires in June 2022. So I saw you mentioning that it's a weird spot for everybody to be in. Do you sell the player now? Can you really freeze out an 18-year-old player? And just, I mean, you can physically, you can freeze him out. That makes sense. But would he allow himself to be frozen out? I mean, that wouldn't make any sense at all to be frozen out for a year if you're an 18-year-old player. I think that's where the club then has leverage.
Yeah, and we should use that leverage. First of all, like, everybody is quick to blame the agencies, and you know, I do believe that one of the big advantages of sulfuric acid is you can put it in a barrel and hopefully, you know, dump those agents in that barrel. But having said that, the customer is king.
True.
So, you know, agencies don't own their players. The players are their clients. So the agents do whatever the player wants. It's not the other way around. Players don't do what the agents want. The agents do what the players want. So the root here is not that, you know, that this agency is greedy, even though they are. The root here is that Ilaish prioritizes money over most other things probably, because I do believe that, you know, I think we have discussed this before when we discussed both Elias and Alejandro Balde 2 weeks ago. A more perfect setup in an elite team for Ilex Mariba does not exist.
Right.
Like, his profile is exactly what Koeman wants in the team and what we do not have. You know, here, he can be a local hero and as such be forgiven for mistakes a bit more so than new signings at a club. You know, because every fan, if a youth player of that club plays hard for their club, every fan is more patient with that than a signing. So it is very sad to see what he is doing. I don't, obviously it's not in the interest of the club. I don't see how it is in his own interest. And Barcelona should use the leverage absolutely and simply tell him, look, you know, you think you are worth 3 million euros a year? Great. Go get them somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean,
bring us 30 million.
Yeah, and the only place
whoever wants to sign you.
I don't know if legally I'm allowed to say this, but hey, it's my podcast. But a few years ago, again, I want to say a name, but a few years ago when I was going for, we'll say, a bit more of the on-air broadcasting jobs, I have the job that I have now. People who follow me on the internet know that I do my work. I get my work in. But a lot of those jobs I've gotten on my own over the years through knowing people and just kind of working hard and reaching out, cold calling. But when a few years ago, I did actually use an agency to try to help me get on-air positions, you know, not even union jobs, but it, so again, legally, it wasn't a union. I don't say anything like that. So yeah, I worked at an agency to try to get me some positions. And what they would do for me, or what they would tell me on that side is, now obviously, ES Moriba knows the situation a little better than I did, because I didn't know the other company that they were trying to put on my doorstep. But it took me about 6 months. They did throw some stuff at me that made a little bit of sense. And I worked two jobs that it was fine. They weren't great jobs, but they were jobs the agency found me. But they would then try to overpromise for what I was paying them to look for these positions for me. And they would wind up overpromising. And I think my concern is this agency, again, not to say that they're evil, they're doing for their client what they believe that they can do. So I don't think I don't think it's about a moral argument. It's that their job is to get as much money for their client. And they have the confidence in themselves as an agency to say, we believe that we can get you triple your salary because look at your last negotiations when you were 16 years old. Barca wanted you desperately, and they didn't let you go to Man City. So they gave you your first team debut now at 18. You've always been Ansu Fati level as far as what the club considers you as a prospect. Look at, what is it? Was it The Guardian or was it, I think it was Gold.com. He was considered a top 10 prospect under the age of 19 or 20 or whatever it was. So yeah, he's clearly wanted by other clubs around the world. And I think the agency, I would not be surprised if he winds up signing anyway for that 3 million or 3 year contract that Barcelona has set out. I think that this could be over next week and he's now a Barca player and we all then have to kind of forget this happened, because that's what happens. It's all money. It has nothing to do with us, the fans. So that's what I would just tell people, that I went off on my thing about the racist stuff. Again, that's completely absurd. But even you and I, where it's like, I try my best and hedge my bets because I'm not going to disparage a player and their motives in negotiations when A, there's nothing in the news cycle, and B, if he does wind up staying at the club, you know, it's just business as normal. It has nothing to do with me. It's a bunch of rich people arguing with other rich people, you know? Well, I'm just hosting a podcast thousands of miles away, so I mean, what do I care? You know what I mean? At the end of the day, I care because I host this, but if it's decided and he stays at the club, and, you know, we'll say goodbye if we have to, but until then, I mean, I assume he's going to be a Barcelona player, and they're just negotiating, and if for anything, it's a lesson for me that in my personal life, I need to fight harder for the things I need to fight for. I need to fight for myself a little harder on different jobs and stuff.
Sure, possible. But I mean, you're right that the agency has the right to try to get him as much money as possible. At the same time, he can tell the agency, hey, you know,
I want
you know that did you know that I already have 1 million euros on my bank account?
Yeah.
On the other side, I was very disappointed in the club that they did not denounce all of the racist abuse that Ilex Mariba posted and shared on Instagram.
Yep.
This is such an easy thing for the club to do, just to put out a statement that say, hey, you know, there's absolutely no place.
Oh, they did do that.
In football, they did?
Yeah, they did. So what they did is they reposted the video, his video on Instagram, and then they condoned it with that. So they definitely could have done more. And that's always my argument that clubs and FIFA and UEFA, even more so than the clubs, they could always do more. But yeah, I think let's pivot away from ELAS because I want to end the show by talking about what I, again, expect to see against Stuttgart is trying to figure out, and it's hard, it's impossible to do without Messi and Aguero, but I'm trying to figure out who will be Barcelona's best front three. And as I said on Monday, that Griezmann would almost definitely be part of the squad. So, I mean, do you agree that wasn't premature to say that Griezmann's probably going to be around and we have to figure out what that is? And I'm going to let you answer this. I just want to give you the setup here. Messi, Fati, Griezmann, Memphis, Aguero, Dembele, Brathwaite, Caiado are all seven are in theory going to be along that front three line this year. There's no way they'll keep all of them. You know, probably Brathwaite or Caiado will either be sold for Brathwaite, loaned for Caiado, something to that effect. And we don't know how healthy Fati is, so he is still a huge question mark. So now you're already down to four, or right, and then Dembele still hurt too. So now you're already down to four in Memphis, Griezmann, Messi, and Aguero. But individually, I want to give you their goal totals and see if this helps you try to figure out the front three. No? You don't want them? Give it to me.
No, because I think it's more about compatibility than just goal totals. I believe with all of our amazing forwards that we have, and did you name Brathwaite as part of those seven?
As a seven, okay. Yeah. Or eight, sorry, there's eight. Yep.
Yeah.
There's and it's Dembele, yeah.
Out of those eight, if everybody is fit and playing to maximum potential, you have Messi at false nine, Ansu Fati on the left, making those runs, and Dembele on the right, who, when he plays the full potential, conditions the opponent like almost no other player in the world. So yeah, sorry for Depay, sorry for Griezmann. Not so sorry for Aguero, I'm sorry for us that we signed him. However, that's if they played to full potential. We all know that Ansu Fati has knee issues that he might not recover from. We also know that Dembele has both injury issues and he is not as consistent as we would like. So we don't know if he really makes that next step so that we can see him play to his full potential consistently. Which leaves us with Messi. And in my opinion, it would be Messi, Griezmann, Depay. What would be interesting then is where you play them. I think that if you look at the whole team, you still want Messi in the middle because putting Messi on the wing just leaves a huge door that is wide open for the other team to attack us.
Especially if Dest is playing it right back and overlapping, especially in that case.
Yeah, especially. But I think even with Emerson.
Right.
Even with Emerson, because Emerson also overlaps. Mm-hmm. And if you have Messi in the middle, then you put Griezmann on the right. But we all know that Griezmann will go inside, which means that for width, one of the right backs will automatically overlap. So I would still put Messi in the middle, in which case Depay goes on the left and Griezmann on the right.
So I do want to play a little game with you as I go to answer this, because you know me, it comes down to numbers or metrics or all that stuff. But of these five players, Fati, Aguero, Dembele, Brathwaite, Caiado. So again, that's Fati, Aguero, Dembele, Brathwaite, Caiado. Can you list their number of goals from most to least last season?
Ooh, no, I cannot. Wait.
And Caiado's tough. He does get a little bit of an asterisk because he did do it in the third division. So it's a little different.
Yeah, I know. Caiado has seven goals or more?
He had eight. So he was actually...
He had eight.
Yeah, so he's actually second on that list.
He's second. Is Fati first?
Fati was last with only the five, which again, asterisk next to that because he got hurt too.
Wait, name me the five again.
Yeah, so it's Dembele, it's Brathwaite, it's Caiado, it's Fati and Aguero.
Okay, Aguero had four.
He's six. He had six.
Six. Right, because he scored those two goals when he came back from injury in that one game. That
yeah,
six.
He got the two little at the end.
Dembele had more than 10.
Yes, he had 11.
Yes, right. Dembele had 11. Is Dembele on top there?
Yes, with 11. All of 11 goals. Dembele, yeah. Of that five, was the most last year at 11. And then you have Caiado at 8, Brathwaite at 7, Aguero at 6, Fati at 5. Which is, it's just incredible when you look at how difficult it is to project from year to year. So in a few weeks, I'll go through all my numbers and my projections of, I always did every year, we predict how many goals I think each guy will get, what we add up the totals to, why Barca would win the Liga based on goal numbers. But yeah, I mean, but even looking at the other ones, Messi had 38, which is incredible. We expect that number to be lower. And then Griezmann had 20 and Memphis had 22. both of those numbers, because of the other one being in the club, I expect to go down as well. So I don't, how does Memphis get 22 again playing alongside Messi and Griezmann? Yes, Messi's assists might get him a little bit more, but then playing next to Griezmann and his availability is going to drop him down. And same thing with Griezmann. I don't know how he gets, I don't know, 22 is tough. If you get 20 from Griezmann, 22 from Memphis, and 38 from Messi, Barcelona's won La Liga. Have they not? Have they, if you get even those three numbers, barring everybody else on the other five that we mentioned, Barcelona.
Okay, 22. 22 plus 38 is 60. Plus another 20 from Griezmann, that's 80.
Yeah.
Plus another 20 goals from, I mean, yeah, we can be very happy with that. Of
from
course.
Everybody else. That's what I'm saying. That goal number wins you La Liga most years. But we know last year, defense, the conceded is what won you La Liga the last 2 years now.
Right. How many goals did we have last year? Didn't we have over 100 goals? We had a crazy amount of goals last year. Scoring was not a problem.
Right, because De Jong also gave you almost double digits as well. Right.
No, we had 7.
Right, so 7, something around there.
I think a bigger obstacle for Memphis to reach that number is that he doesn't take penalties. Mm-hmm. You see, he scored quite a bit of penalties for Lyon last year.
It's true. Did he have any free? I think he had a free kick or two as well.
And yeah, and free kicks as well.
Yeah.
And he probably will have to share his minutes a lot more than he did at Lyon, where he was the captain and almost played. But if on the other hand, if Depay is a regular starter for Barcelona in that front three, with the dominance and the chances that get created by Barcelona, he'll get to 20. Yeah, of course he will, because it's not the same being Lyon and playing in Ligue 1. Or being Barcelona, and you know, we created more chances than almost any other team last season.
We did in all top five European leagues. Yeah,
so 20 should be within reach. But for me, a forward does not have to score 20 as long as the team scores goals and as long as the team creates chances. We scored more goals than I think almost any other team, except maybe one or two teams in the top five leagues last season. So I think only Bayern and maybe Paris Saint-Germain scored more.
Yeah.
But their leagues are easier than ours as well. So to me, it does not really matter that, you know, you have Messi who scores over 30 and then Dembélé, although I think that he should have contributed more than 11. I don't think it's the end of the world that he didn't. Or Griezmann, who did not score 20 league goals, for example.
Sure.
But I think we missed last summer, and I'll repeat this or last season, I'll repeat this a million times if necessary, is Ansu Fati was injured.
Yeah, it's not just you. That's the key. He is the key to next season. He's the key at how, as much as Messi and Griezmann in Memphis. So that's my answer. I think due to what we saw against Girona, I think you're going to see Memphis up the middle. I think you're going to see Griezmann on the left, and you're going to see Messi on the right. I think it's what you will see. It's not even what I think that I want to see or my personal opinion, but due to Caiado's spacing, I think that is what Ronald Koeman is looking to do with those three being the starters. I think that is the idea, because nobody at this moment can trust where Fati is in his recovery. And they're obviously, Dembele is out for a while too. Nobody can trust his recovery either. And you do not create a team built on Aguero or Brathwaite or Caiado. So I think that we will see Griezmann, Memphis, and Messi in that order. But I completely agree with you too. And I don't think it's almost now being oversaid and overdone, but Ansu Fati is certainly the key, because if Ansu Fati is healthy, can any club in the world match a front four of Fati, Messi, Griezmann, and whoever else Messi or Memphis, whatever one I didn't say. I mean, can any club match those four if all four are at, even if Fati's at 89% and Memphis is at 80% and Griezmann is at 78%, that's enough for a front four.
Okay. I mean, you mean a front four that, you know, share the minutes.
Correct. Right, right.
And anybody who had said.
Right, right. Where one of them is the fourth one rotating in. And then you also have Aguero and Dembélé, of course, as variables.
And Dembélé, especially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Bayern Munich's front three, I like a lot. You know, those wingers are not star names, Gnabry and Coman, but they play very well and they're very dangerous. And then as the fourth person, they have, what's the name of that kid who came from City, who went back to Germany?
Leroy Sané.
Sané. I mean,
that's a good four.
That's a good four as well.
PSG's four is PSG's four is pretty incredible too.
Yeah, who do they have? They have Neymar, Mbappe,
They have Sarabia, Di Maria. They've got some talent.
They have that idiot who played for Barca and left for the Argentine guy with the girlfriend who always embarrasses everybody.
Mauro Icardi.
Yeah.
That's how you remember. That's great.
That's a pretty impressive front four as well. Who does Pep have?
He's got tons of talent too. So yeah, we could continue to go through. Yes, it is likely, but I think the idea, and this is where we end it, is that I think the idea, because of Barcelona's financial struggles, because of the 8-2 against Bayern Munich that was over a year ago, because of PSG last year, there is an idea that Barca, I think, have done what AC Milan did, or that Juventus did when they got punished, that they've fallen into the second tier, that Barcelona's expectations this year should be alongside Dortmund, or should be alongside, again, AC Milan, or it should be alongside even Arsenal and Manchester United until they get back to the top of the mountain. That there's this upper crust that's Man City, and that's Bayern, that's PSG, and then you have that second tier. And actually, Real Madrid is still, because of their Champions League success, has always put in that top tier no matter what. No matter how good they are, they're always put there. But I think there's an idea that I pick up from everybody else that, I mean, a lot of people were waiting. They were waiting for Barcelona to struggle because their team was dominated by Barcelona 10 years ago, and people still are holding that grudge. And I think a lot of, not neutrals, but I think a lot of people were waiting for that failure. And so I think there is an anointing Barcelona that, of course, if when Barcelona crash out, it'll be all Messi's fault and they should have been in tier one. But if they finish in tier two, if you will, and are just a step below the big three or four teams in European football, everybody gets to say, "I told you so." I mean, and that's obviously the bad faith argument that exists on the internet. But just looking at the talent on the roster, I did the same thing to myself last year. And you've seen our mutual friend Kevin Williams is doing the same thing. I'm looking at our roster and I'm saying that team can win the Liga. That team can win the Champions League. That team, maybe not all three, the Copa del Rey. It's a long season and Pedri obviously is going to be tired. But I think that is a roster and a squad that can win all the trophies. And I talked myself into it last year and I stand by what I said last year and I'm going to stand by it again. Especially keeping Messi in tow with all the young talent that they have and bringing in Memphis and Garcia all on freeze. I just think that their squad is good enough to win.
Oh, I think we have a very exciting group of players. I am very excited for the new season. Just like I was excited last summer as well. I was not excited with Valverde.
Of course.
And just seeing the same group of players.
Yeah.
I think the unknown here, the X factor, is whether we can register more and what Laporta will have to do to make that possible.
Yeah.
I don't know if, right now, if we cannot get rid of anybody, which is what it seems, like we cannot even give them away, he either needs to just fire them and wait for the lawsuits, and then possibly we have to pay even more than we owe them 2 years from now. But at least firing them gets the salary out of the way. That is what can really screw us. But I have never really seen us as the next Milan, in part because the way that our club makes money does not depend on a Silvio Berlusconi.
Yeah, so you make it hand over foot, yep.
Yeah, so for Milan, it was not that, hey, you know, they fell on hard times. No, their sugar daddy left. And sometimes when a woman is with a sugar daddy for a very long time and that sugar daddy leaves, then she doesn't know how to take care of herself. We have never known how to take care of ourselves, so we are exactly where we were 20 years ago in Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, I can't support your analogy, but what I do know, as far as us having this conversation, Ronald Koeman has barely come up at all, and I think what that kind of says, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, but if the majority of the fan base is complaining or if we're all arguing about the minutes of Ricky Puig, that means that the squad is in a good spot. That means that there is institutional trust in Ronald Koeman. And as much as I do want to kind of end the conversation by saying that Ronald Koeman is still going to be the one making decisions that will decide the season. So there will be moments in the season where, whether it's formation, whether it's a lineup, there's going to be moments when the onus will be back on Ronald Koeman. And I think due to everything happening at the club and the players that need to be out, just like last year, we kind of give him a bit of a pass as to the squad that he can only work with the squad he has. And he had some requests, and he said, hey, can I have this and this and this? The club got him Eric Garcia. the club got him Memphis to buy. He missed out on his midfielder, but by and large, he's gotten the players and the type of style that he wants to have. So now we get to see season two of his vision. And as I talked about when he was hired the very first time, it's always been a roller coaster for 20 years with him in charge. So will this roller coaster of Ronald Koeman now at the biggest club he's ever managed, will it keep going up? Or after last year, which I would consider what? Just, I mean, for those watching, I mean, just a little bit, right? It's just a little bit of a slant upward last year for his managerial career. It was a positive where he had had negatives like a Valencia. It could have gone that poorly. And so this year is going to become for Ronald Koeman. Will he make the decisions? Will he be quote unquote stubborn as we've accused him of, for better or worse? Again, and will his stubbornness help him or will it hurt him? We know that's something that's part of his personality and some of his decision making. And I think at the end of the year, it comes down to who? Koeman and Messi. And that's what I think that's who it comes down to, as always. As much as we try to talk ourselves through ES Moriba and everything else happening, it always comes down to the big stuff. So final word to you, Levan, then we'll wrap it up.
I think we can expect Koeman to be brave. He'll play youth. And if the club is not successful, then Koeman will leave. I think that even if the club plays well, the team plays well, because I do think that last season we played well. I was happy. I turned on the TV before the game started, and I was happy again, which had not happened for over 2 years. Over 2 years, I was barely excited to go to the stadium sometimes. But under Koeman, I was just happy to know that Barca played. They're playing in an hour. Yeah, I'm getting excited. I'm already looking forward to watching them. Sometimes they play well, sometimes they play less well, but I was excited. I think that will continue. And if at the end of the season there is no silverware, no important titles, then Laporta will choose another coach. If Koeman wins something important and the football is good, great.
I think in the modern age, I mean, the big clubs, it's sometimes even shorter, but I prefer to let a manager get three seasons just for sake of stability. I think a lot of young players, when they're 35 years old, they always say that instability when I was 18 to 21 years old in a managerial spot can derail careers a lot quicker than the hope of finding the right guy in that position. So, yeah, I think that we found the right formula here to try to break down preseason. We'll keep on it as we're just, 2 weeks plus a few days away from the first match of the season in La Liga action. So not too much time to go. I still got some surprises for you in the next 2 weeks. So look forward to those here on the Barcelona Podcast. Again, thanks for listening to another edition of the show. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. That's at Barcelev for him. And our closed Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast. You can ask some questions there occasionally. I'll have a guest or two in the coming weeks that we will be answering some questions. So that'll be fun. And then Patreon is how you help us financially support the show. And we have these without the ads. I know we had a bunch of ads today in the middle of today's show. So there are no ads up on Patreon. You can watch it ad-free over there. A little incentive to support the show as well. And then we're on YouTube. Still trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the season. But hey, there's some fun stuff going on there. That's the Barcelona Podcast. Most importantly, though, thanks for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.